Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting once again in the heart of the Klempire, Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge, with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hello there. How are you today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm all right. You're good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh.
Feeling pretty chipper.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Why is that?
Had a busy week. Went to Friday night fights there Aretha Castle Haley on Friday.
You got your ass kicked as always.
Sure, right? Sure. Well, that's part of the fun. That was before I even got to the place, man. It was just between my car and the gym.
That's what I'd be worried about. Pat Cronin was such a wonderful person. I don't know. I think even though we all feel sad that he's gone, just the thought
of him
cheers us up.
Well, it was great to have known him. And so they had a gathering at the Treffinger's house. And, my wife was texting me saying, well, when you get there, let me know if there's anybody I'll know there. And I got there and I was like, there's everybody you will know here. It was tons of people from the old Mermaid days. A lot of people I didn't even know knew Pat, like our guest here. I didn't realize that she was acquainted with Pat, but it was nice to see all those people. But I had to leave early. Then I went and played a gig over at Chicky Wawa with Ed Volker from the Radiators, one of his side projects. We had a packed house over there, so that was good.
That was something to feel good about.
Yeah, that was nice, and then had a big birthday party for four of the people in my family. We have these kind of birthday parties that will, include all the people that have had birthdays over the past few months. So we had one of those on Sunday. And then yesterday, we had to move the podcast one day. Thank you for doing that. And my son had promoted a comedy show over at the Comedy House New Orleans with this comic, his favorite traveling comic. He had managed to get this guy to add a date to his tour, set up the gig with the venue, and promoted it and wound up selling it out. So,
excellent.
So that was
on your hands there.
Yeah, yeah.
So where's my cut from Daniel then?
I don't know.
I switch my night so he can have his event. Doesn't give me a little taste.
I don't think even Daniel wet his beak on that one. I was just all for the love of the game on this time around. Just put it all in the comics pocket.
Very much.
Just whetted his appetite though.
But so anyway, how have you been, Manny?
I've been all right.
Okay.
Not as good as you, I guess.
Well, I don't know.
You know, watches grown men beat the shit out of each other. He likes to see that.
I like a little
celebrating death.
Mano a mano action. Yeah. Oh no, it was all very positive.
Sounds very turn of the last century.
Yeah. Well, we did. We had a change of time this past Saturday night. We sprung forward.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, what do I?
And they say, well, somebody was asking. They're like, oh, we're gonna lose an hour. So like a. That's such a big problem, just losing 1 hour overnight.
Well, for some people it is. Some people who work for a living, don't have to get up at,
Well, I mean.
People who have to get up at certain times are used to getting up at X clock, 7 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning. It throws you all off.
Really? Takes more than
you don't have to do.
Takes more than a day. I have to change the time that I get up every day. Or often every I got to fly out at
every day you got to fly somewhere.
No,
every
not,
day you got to get up at a certain time.
Not every day. I'm
well,
exaggerating.
Well, you just said every day.
I understand
just say
you're being
every
very
day?
You're
he's
being very literal, Manny.
But
I'm saying I often have to get up at different times. I got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning on Friday to fly to New York to go play dates up there. So that's just. But I figured.
That's
well,
not my problem, is it?
Anyway, it's something that can
for
be
us
done to
moms
people.
Moms who used to have to take their children to school in the morning and have to get up at 6:30 in the morning. Yes.
Okay.
I think about maybe making a lunch, yes.
Right. Well, I was thinking, as people who have had plenty of lost time in the past, plenty of unaccountable hours. I was thinking, when you've lost as many hours as we have, what's one more? But anyway, just a thought.
I mean, what is time? We're all just killing time, right?
Right, right. Just,
you know?
Just spanning time.
That's all we're doing every day is just killing time.
Sure.
Like we're killing an hour here with you. You know?
Right.
Thank you.
So we had the State of the Union address. Did you see any of that, Manny, last week? No, I didn't look in on that.
I saw because
I was watching.
Dixie Cups address.
It was Penn and Teller's Magic Show. I love that show.
Okay.
You ever see that show, Penn and Teller's Fool Us? Fabulous show. I was watching that instead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
What do I need to watch a State of the Union?
Barbara Hawkins was in town. And she did a performance at Loyola University. So basically, she's the only living member left of the Dixie Cups. So I was listening to Barbara Hawkins give the State of the Dixie Cups address.
State of the Dixie Cups, yeah.
University.
You know, I backed the Dixie Cups up a couple of years ago.
I bet you did.
It was one of the coldest nights I've ever played in my life.
Wow.
It was during Family Garage.
What, they didn't put out for you? That was a cold night?
It was cold, yeah. I was hoping I'd have some body heat going on there. But anyway, that was lovely.
What happened at this address?
At the address, well, Biden came out. He was on fire.
A Republican accused of him being on methamphetamine or something like that.
Well, they can say anything. Now, at the same time, there was a report on all of the or rather an article that came out, I think, in Rolling Stone about how the Trump administration was awash in prescription medication, and especially like speed and opiates during the previous administration, and they mentioned this one drug that they were using a lot of, which is Provigil. So we actually talked about Provigil once long ago in the podcast So Provigil is like a super speed that they prescribe people who have narcolepsy. But if you don't have narcolepsy and you take it, it's kind of acts like if you ever saw that movie Limitless, where it's like a smart pill kind of. So it's just such an intense, like, Adderall times 10 or something. That it does speed up your mind and increases your focus.
That's what they were accusing Biden of being.
No, that's the Republicans were saying, oh, he's on some kind of speed. But in fact, simultaneously this report came out or an article came out about how actually the Trump administration was using tons of this Provigil stuff. Now the problem with Provigil, I had a friend who was on it, and he said, I was prescribed it. I was on it for a few days. He goes, then I kind of went crazy. And I came to. I was in federal custody, and I couldn't figure out why I was in federal custody. And then they showed me a videotape of me trying to cut the computer cords. And this guy worked at a rocket testing facility. He was like a Department of Defense contractor. So he didn't have
great
any
screening he by did, the Department of
he,
Defense.
He didn't have any. He'd worked there for years and years and years, but he'd only been on this medication for a short time and drove him crazy. So anyway, that's
so. Why do you take it?
Well,
so who in the administration was on this?
I don't know. I think all that was a HIPAA violation to release that information. But what was your question, Manny?
Why do you need this medicine? What's your condition that you need this medicine?
Well, narcoleptic.
You're narcoleptic?
Yeah, if you have narcolepsy, then you might need this prescription.
Well, if you have narcolepsy, it doesn't do that to you, I suppose, because you're already so close to nodding out. But a lot of normal people will take it because it's a performance enhancer, But there, it also, with regular use, can drive you crazy,
No, why would they hire someone who's a narcoleptic to work in the Defense Department? That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, my friend's not narcoleptic. I don't know why his psychiatrist put him on this. It was not indicated, obviously.
Does he still work there?
He works somewhere else, but still in same industry.
I'm hoping he works someone
else. Anyway, enough of that.
So Biden was on fire.
Right. Okay. So people are excited now. They're like, okay, well, he woke up, and it's going to be a rematch, though. It's going to be a slog to November.
Who cares?
We'll see. All right.
I really don't care.
Well, anything else, Manny?
Do you hear that the county jail, the parish jail has rats, or the police headquarters has rats?
It's been
and
big
they're
news.
They're getting high. They're eating all the. They're going into the drug room,
right?
And getting high.
Eating the evidence.
Eating the evidence. You know, I thought just the prisoners and the officers were doing that stuff.
Sure.
But it's actual rats.
That's right.
You know?
You would lock on to that
story.
You know,
but, and then today, apparently, they found some guy trying to break into the jail.
I saw that. He was walking along the edge of the building, of the roof. Yeah, yeah.
He was trying to break into the jail. A lot of people said he was trying to deliver some drugs to the inmates. But then someone said that he was just nuts.
Right.
You know? He was on Provigil, whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah. He might have been having a bit of a psychotic break himself.
But, yeah, that's kind of crazy. That just happened in the last couple of days. But you know what I found out? Last week, I read this article that, you remember growing up as a kid, they brought out vanilla chocolate chip ice cream? Mm. And I thought, wow. Because I remember, you know, before Baskin-Robbins, it was just, you'd go to the local place and be chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, or all three mixed together, maybe a couple other. And then they came out with vanilla chocolate chip.
That's right.
And I thought, wow, get two scoops for a nickel, you know?
Once it's in the 20s?
Really?
No, in the 70s.
Two scoops for a nickel? Wow.
Yeah.
That.
Okay.
Yeah, I used to go to the
machine.
The Grant's department store. They had a soda fountain. You get a scoop of ice, two scoops for a nickel, three scoops for like 15 cents.
Okay. All right.
You know, gas used to be like 20 cents in the 70s.
I do remember when it was 25 cents.
So things were cheap, you know.
Right.
I remember I was 5-6 years old, and me and my brother would go down to the local corner's grocery store. We'd get a bag of chips and a Coke for 7 cents.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Anyway, so apparently in the last few years, vanilla chocolate chip is like one of the least favorite.
Yeah,
and
that's
companies
true.
Aren't making it anymore. You can't find it.
Now, do you like that kind of ice cream?
Yeah, I enjoy it. I love banana splits.
Right, I like a banana split myself.
I used to like chocolate chip, you know, vanilla chocolate chip with a banana and some cherries and some nuts and a little bit more chocolate syrup, you know? And I put it on top of two nice breasts, and I eat away.
Oh, okay.
You know, eat away.
All right.
But, yeah, I just found that funny because I didn't realize it because, you know, raising a kid for 18 years, she never really liked banana splits. She didn't really like ice cream much.
Hmm.
So I didn't buy it. But now that she's gone, I'm starting to buy it again.
Right.
You know, and I realized, where's the chocolate chip? Where's the vanilla chocolate chip?
I see.
You know,
this is a crisis.
And then I read this article saying that it's like, it went from like being a top 10, like 10 years ago, it's like not even in the top 30.
That's true.
Yeah, I can't think of.
Ben & Jerry's happened.
You know?
And now we have infinite numbers of flavors.
Right.
Yeah, I can't think of
and people are adding medication to their ice cream, like Provigil, things like that. And rats are eating the ice cream.
That's the flavor I'm looking for.
You know, prisoners are eating ice cream.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had that flavor of ice cream, the vanilla chocolate chip.
You never have?
No,
remember chocolate chip mint?
I didn't really like it.
Chocolate chip mint was a huge thing there
for
a while,
again,
too, but I'm not a mint fan.
Yeah, me either. Now, my favorite ice cream was like at Baskin-Robbins. It's always been Jamocha Almond Fudge. I love that one. It's got the coffee. It's got the fudge, the almonds.
Yeah,
that's good stuff.
Coffee and fudge. They belong together.
Yeah, see, my wife's not a sweet. She doesn't like sweets, so I'm the only one who eats the sweets, really. And I offer a banana split, and she says no.
Huh.
You know, she doesn't want a banana split.
All right, well. Well, you know, back to the rats. They were talking about the rats. This has come up all of a sudden. It seems like they're kind of agitating. They want the city to spend a bunch of money on new police facilities. They're trying to lease this, you know, several floors in a downtown high rise.
That's right.
And I was thinking, well, I mean, you've known this is a problem for some time. You know, can you get like an exterminator or maybe a cat or something, you know, to deal with the rats
on duty now?
But and then they said, well, it's not just a problem at the headquarters. It's a problem at every precinct.
Well, it's a problem in the city.
Thinking, well, Jesus, you know, like maybe you could clean up or something, you know, just not leave. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they have bigger problems than they understand.
You know, you used to party a lot. We used to do a lot of heroin and crack cocaine and stuff like that. You know, you had a party and all of a sudden people are, you know, nodding off and stuff. And then the rats really come out and start taking their stash and shit like that. Man.
Oh, jeez.
You know.
In the trap house.
Yeah.
Our new chief of police said that there was sometimes
Emo Phillips
poop on the table, poop on the desks. When people would come in to sit, to do the paperwork.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Clean up. You got to clean up after yourself better. You know,
it's it just wasn't in the I guess the budget.
Bad housekeeping.
In the drawer is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean,
gotcha.
I don't know.
Well, I remember this is years ago. I was hanging out when I was doing lots of dope and dope deals and stuff. Hanging out, I met this gangbanger, Hispanic gangbanger. His name was Chocho. And he had a really cool lowrider and stuff. And I was at his house hanging out, you know, and just partying and stuff. And he's got this really cool ruca. And he says to his ruca, Hey, babe, why don't you go get us a couple pizzas, a carton of cigarettes, some beer? She's like, all right, baby. And it's the funniest thing ever. And he gives her a bunch of cash. She's walking out, and he goes, oh, wait. And get some crack.
Just as an afterthought.
Yeah, he was like, wait a minute, man. I thought that was hilarious. He's dead now.
Okay.
You know.
Surprising.
He got eaten by rats.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
Didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
This was after he died, I would think.
That's how he died.
I wasn't there. I hear things.
All right.
You know, you figure they do something, but this fucking, you know, police department, this fucking city, it's so fucking, you know, are you surprised?
Wait a minute. No,
surprised? I'm not. But it seems like they
you
could
think someone would have
self-help.
You know, what was the interim police chief there for a while? What was her name? I forget her name.
Right, I know.
Who
you're
just retired.
About.
Yeah, Witten or
Whitmore.
Whitmore. Okay. Whitlock.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Whitlock. Yeah. You think she would have done something? But they're all just sitting there getting money. You know, everyone's just getting
they're overwhelmed. They give up.
Yeah, you know. So, anyway, yeah. So the rats are taking over. You know, what they need is why don't you get one of your musician friends to play the instrument, lead all the rats
like
out of the city.
A Pied Piper, sort
yeah.
of deal. Okay,
get them all out of here.
And Kirkpatrick, right? And Kirkpatrick is our new chief of police.
Kirkpatrick is correct. Yeah.
Emo Phillips is her name.
She's got that Emo Phillips hairdo.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, Emo Phillips.
Come on, I like the lady.
Really?
Let's give her a chance.
You like the ladies? Yeah. I like the ladies too. All
wait
right.
a minute. Okay. Didn't she turn L.A. around?
No.
No.
She tried to turn Oakland around.
Oakland.
Apparently, she turned it around for the worse. And now she's in New Orleans. They hire her. That's
sure
how smart. I'm positive about that. I'm from California. My sister lives in the Bay Area.
All right.
You know.
We'll
give her a chance.
Yeah,
you know?
Let's get her
on the show too.
Okay. That's
you know,
a
we'll
great
get her on
idea.
The show. Maybe she'll bring some rats.
Yeah, or
I guess I'm sure there's tons here.
I've actually
seen some here, to be honest with you.
Man, I was passing by, driving downtown the other day and sitting in a red light, and there was a homeless encampment on the side of me, and there was rats running in and out of it right in front of my car.
Yeah, man.
Crazy. Jesus Christ. Well, anyway, enough
they
about rats.
They should eat them.
May I comment on someone on the side of the road? I was driving down the road, and there was this lady, and she looked like she had just stepped out of an office, okay? Like, she looked way too nice to be homeless.
Okay.
And she was holding a cardboard sign, and it said, Palantir sucks. And I kept staring at her, and I kept staring at the sign, and I was like, what do I do? Am I supposed to give her this lady money? I mean, I'm feeling
Who
a little
sucks?
Sorry for Palantir.
Who's Palantir?
And,
what is that?
Well, that's what I said. And so it took me all the way until I got home. Okay, the next red light. And then I looked it up, and I found out Palantir is an AI company. So what this woman was trying to tell me was that she got fired because she lost her job to AI, and therefore I should give her money?
Well, I don't know. That's a weird way to go about it, man.
I agree with you.
You have unemployment, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you.
First thing to do.
And I felt if you're clever enough to have a job that you were replaced by AI, I'm pretty sure you could get
a lunatic,
job.
You know. Might just be a completely crazy
and
person.
And there is that.
Well, Manny, maybe we should get our guest in here since
she's already ready to take over here.
This is a guest I've known for a few years, primarily a muralist, a painter, a theatrical scenery artist. Has also done Mardi Gras float painting. Her work is seen at the New Orleans Aquarium, Audubon Zoo, the Insectarium, Nature Center, House of Blues. She's also a former burlesque producer and performer. She was with the Shim Shamettes, also a one-time stripper putting herself through art school. We're going to get into all that. She's been involved in several music projects. She was in the band The Mire, also had the band Lushingtons, as well as the Souvenirs. Also worked in the film biz a bit. We're going to get into all that. But without further ado, the great Ms. Max Bernardi. Welcome, Max.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
So, Max, I know you're not from New Orleans. Tell us a little bit about, what happened to you before you got to New Orleans.
Before I got to New Orleans, I was growing up in Mobile, Alabama. But even before that, I was born in Brunswick, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
And
do we know Brunswick, Georgia for something?
Unfortunately, it was the site of some criminal activity against a black man who was just trying to go for a jog. I think he was assaulted. I can't remember.
Is that recently? Okay, I can't remember that.
Two or three years ago, okay. And I was really devastated.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was devastated when I heard about that.
Wow,
that's not what I wanted to remember about the place I was born.
He was wandering, but he wandered into a
construction site.
Yeah,
maybe he was just running through it. How we go.
Yeah, I think he was jogging.
We go for a run. We just might change scenery a little bit and run through weird spaces.
Yeah, just get off my lawn kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so. I think they were suspicious of him. Like, he maybe was stealing building materials or something?
No, he wasn't. I think there had been a theft there, but he was just a guy jogging.
Exactly.
No, yeah.
But that's my point.
Right.
You know.
Well, anyway.
You were the neighbor.
Unfortunately, I have nothing to do with
you. You weren't involved. Well, fortunately, you'd say. Yeah, you weren't involved in any of that ugliness. Mm-hmm. So, and you were well gone by that time. Right. So you
grew up. My mom was a school teacher there. Mm-hmm. At the time, and she met my father. She decided to enter a play. I forget, she was playing in The Odd Couple, and she met my father, who was building scenery. So you see how this is already setting up a path for my life.
Okay, so your father was involved in...
set building as well.
Okay. Well, so you grow up in Mobile, you say?
I grew up in Mobile for the most part. 12 years of Catholic school there.
Okay, so are you interested in painting, drawing
totally.
All through school?
Yeah, I would say I pretty much knew I wanted to be an artist from about the second grade. Everyone said that my coloring pages were like better than anyone else's, and they were like, "Oh my God, you understand gravity and." Understand how to not do gravity too, because I did like an astronaut floating through the air trying to deliver mail to a mailbox that was floating off of the moon. Anyway, I think that maybe we had just landed on the moon and it made a big impression on me.
Whitey on the moon. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. So anyway, I did better coloring drawings than anyone else.
Okay. So you were standing out right from the start.
Get-go,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Now, so you have mom and dad, siblings.
No, I'm an only child.
Only child. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I'm not sure how many only children we've had on the show. I think you may be first in at least one other area. So you graduate from high school. You go to art school?
I did. Well, first, honestly, I went to Berry College first for 2 years. Rome, Georgia. It's in Rome, Georgia. Henry Ford designed some incredible buildings there. Reverend Howard Finster created art right outside of Rome, Georgia.
And that's where they found those 12 bodies, right?
What?
Yeah.
Missed
Rome,
that story.
Rome, Georgia, yeah. There were 12 black children who were buried together.
My
I remember
God.
That. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Look it up. Yeah.
Okay.
Jeez,
yeah,
okay.
I think it was back in the 40s or something.
An ugly theme on the terrible show already.
You know.
Wait a minute.
You've been around, man.
So okay. Anyway, but I didn't really fit in there. It's a Christian college, and I knew I wanted to do art. So I transferred very quickly to Atlanta College of Art and studied there for a while. And while in foundation design, I worked at a frame shop. I was making $5 an hour. I was really having trouble affording the art supplies. You know, my parents were footing the bill for my apartment and tuition, but I was supposed to come up with everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. The power bill and
so that's when you started stripping.
I had a friend who was like, "You know what we should do? We should go audition as strippers." And I was like, "That's ludicrous. Get away from me." And then over the summer, I started thinking about it and about
seeming like a better idea.
Well, I was missing assignments sometimes because I was getting paid biweekly, and I would like an assignment would come up on Monday that was due Thursday or Friday.
You couldn't afford
and I didn't. I wouldn't get my check until Friday,
it,
right, and I was like, "Wait
from
a
frame
minute!"
Shop,
right.
Could, yeah.
So I was like, "Well, that's it. I'm gonna try to audition."
Yeah.
Okay.
You know.
Did you ever think about dealing? You should have just started dealing.
Drug dealing.
Yeah. Provisional.
Well, that thought never occurred to me. But there was another stripper in the school, and she was doing quite well. And honey, she could afford all the art supplies.
And
so,
that's Julia Roberts.
And all the drugs too.
No. I can't remember her name now. But.
So tell us about that. So now that's something you never imagined yourself doing. You seem kind of like a modest, demure girl, shy.
I was very
yes.
shy.
So tell us what that's like.
Well, I picked out this cute little club that was in downtown Atlanta.
Cute strip club.
It was kind of elegant. It had like marble walls and sconces.
And the pimps were midgets, right?
It was No. It was very elegant. And most of the clientele were just men on business trips. They just wanted to get a cocktail, and they just happened to be a strip club right there. But anyway, I went in, and you had to audition, okay? And you had to take, I forget. Get like
provisional
one piece of clothing off, like per song. You got three songs,
okay.
And by the end of the second song, you were supposed to have your bra off. Maybe by the end of the first, I can't remember now. And then by the last song, you were supposed to have your bottoms off. And
so
all
it's totally nude,
right?
Okay.
And all of the girls prepared me. They're like, "Look. You know, I ran
don't
off the stage
jeans.
Crying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's too
I was
hard to get off.
Come on, you don't wear a lawn, okay? But you know, they all prepared me like it was going to be the most devastating, thing the first time they were nude on stage and they ran off crying and I like listened to all these stories and looked at them all and I thought, well, then I don't need to do that because you've already done that anyway. So I just sort of mentally prepared myself. But, you know, by the time I had completely taken my clothes off and I'm just there in nothing but heels, I'm like looking at the audience and I'm like, wait a minute. This is like another costume.
Okay.
Because, you know, this is just my body. But these men aren't really seeing my soul. They can't really see into my mind. They can't know my thoughts.
They don't want to.
You know?
I thought you were going to.
That's the secret.
Is,
they don't care.
The point
I thought
is,
you were going to say, Dad?
Terrible. No, but the point is that I realized that in a way, it's just nothing but another costume.
Okay.
You know, I just didn't feel like they were really seeing me.
So you're working there for how long? Like a year or something? That long?
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, did you do the champagne room and stuff like that?
It wasn't a big place. The place I worked at was kind of small.
Champagne closet.
Anyway, it got me starting to romance about the old days of burlesque when women were doing actual routines and not just
right,
standing
but that's,
there.
Right, but that's not what was happening at your place, right? That's what we want to talk
right,
about
exactly,
right now.
Right, exactly, which was a little dull.
So did they have a champagne room? Did that
it was
kind
a
of
very
thing?
Small place. No, you're thinking the Cheetah, the big Cheetah Club, yeah, they had, there were many things flowing, cocaine being one, champagne being another, yeah.
So the one you worked at, it still has
a sweet little place.
Okay,
honestly.
But it still had like the underbelly of drugs and
no, it really didn't.
Really, really.
I chose very well. I okay. chose very well. It was
really?
Very. It was
okay.
an elegant little place.
Now, were you lap dancing?
Hell no, no. I wasn't doing any of that. No.
No, but the other girls so there, they had like it's kind of were they the other girls it turning was, tricks on
you
the
know
side?
What? No.
No.
None
okay.
of that.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, I'm
honestly,
just asking.
Okay, I want to let's straighten up the story here. Let's straighten up the story. Atlanta. I call it a clean sport in Atlanta.
It's a strip club there, town. There's a ton of strip clubs.
It's a strip club
there.
Town, but there are a lot of mothers who are dropped off by their husbands, and like they're at home with the baby during the day, and while the husband's off working, and then he comes home, she has dinner ready, and then he takes her to work
yeah.
like 2 or 3 days a week, and then they supplement the income that way.
All
you
right,
know,
right.
you
now,
would
did
be
you
so
do
surprised.
The poll?
Women put. They did have a pole.
They had a pole.
Well, no, not at that one. Wait, that was at another one. I did work at
How
one
small
other
was anyway. This place?
it was kind of tiny. I liked it.
Now, Manny, have you been to a lot of strip clubs? Are you a strip
oh, yeah.
club guy? You
well,
like,
I'm not
you
a
like
strip
that?
Club guy, but I've been to a lot of them.
But you like it to be, you like that environment?
Well, growing up in LA, you know, on the Sunset Strip, there's tons of them.
Yeah.
I used to go there just because you get talked into it. I didn't really say, hey, guys, let's go to the strip
right,
club.
Right, yeah, wasn't you? Yeah. Leading
no,
the charge
because I just didn't want to spend you know $14 for a watered down vodka
sure.
and then have to spend another you know $50 to get a lap dance where they don't even fucking touch your cock
right
you know that kind of
you
stuff
you just find some girl and get a bottle
yeah exactly just, yeah. I you know I'm Manny you know
for
chicks
sure.
dig me so
right.
I don't really need to go see that
right
but I had lots of friends who liked doing that and then we'd go to Vegas as young guys and you always end up at a strip bar in Vegas, and that's even more expensive.
Right, sure.
You know,
yeah.
that's just insane. But, you know, I understand the appeal. I've been to a lot of bachelor parties. I've gone to strip clubs or have strippers come to the party.
Right, right,
you
right.
know, and that's a whole different thing, though.
Shit gets crazy then sometimes.
Yeah, that's when that's when lots of sex starts happening.
Right, right, right.
You know?
Now, I've been to a strip club one time.
In your whole life?
In my whole life.
Such a fucking bullshit. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's true.
Really?
When one time I was on the road with the Iguanas, we had a night off. We were touring, opening for Buffett, and we had a night off in Florida, and we're like, let's, you know, we'd been working our asses off. Let's go do something crazy. And somebody was like, let's go to a strip club. I'm like, okay. So we wind up going to this place. It's called the Booby Trap. The building is shaped like two breasts. It's kind of connected in the middle like by a bra. And it was so sleazy. It was a small place too, but it was definitely sleazy. There definitely could some girls
yeah.
turning tricks on the side. I'm sure you could get some really stepped on cocaine with no problem. But man, I found it so depressing and so sad. I remember I got a bunch of ones, and the girls would come over to me, and I'd say, Here's some money. Go give our our drummer a lap dance.
Oh, God.
I kept
yeah.
sicking him on him. He was a guy who liked all that kind of stuff. Not our current drummer, not Doug Garrison, the drummer before him. But he was a strip club kind of guy, you know. But
I used to go down to you know Tijuana where you'd really see the fight.
Like
I mean,
donkey show?
Donkey shows. And that's insanity, man. Jesus.
No,
that's
like
insanity.
Atlanta, it's, I would say there's
strip-y.
More distance. There's more distance between the customer and
it's all
the.
On the up
yeah.
and up.
And,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I wouldn't do it here in the city. I think
you know,
it's
there's
way
also
too
a difference between
here.
Black and white strip clubs. Black
yep,
strip clubs,
probably.
they will do a lot more for you.
Yeah.
They will do
anything
a lot.
Goes.
Yeah.
Okay.
As opposed to the white ones. You know, because usually the white strip clubs and even the black ones, all these girls who are all have pimps.
Right, right.
You know, so if you want to get a lap dance, well, then you want to go to the champagne room, and you want more in the champagne of the champagne room, because the champagne room is like, you spend $100 for a watered down bottle of champagne, and you get very little action.
Well, Chris Rock says there's no sex in the champagne
exactly,
room.
Exactly, there is no sex yeah. in the champagne room.
No.
Exactly. But then after, if you come up with more money, then that's when the action starts.
Meet you in the parking lot.
There's a lot more sugar daddy action in this town.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and every time, I guess Atlanta, there's not.
I
don't know.
I didn't encounter it.
Okay.
I didn't see any of that. I felt like it was more up and up, more like students trying to put themselves through college.
Well, I'm sure that there's a lot of that
you know,
everywhere.
Moms.
you know.
Yeah, but I really didn't see. I mean, there were other places.
Now, was this a mom and pop operation that you worked at? It sounds like a mom and pop because it's so tiny and quaint and nice and cute.
Well, it was called the Cheetah 3, so it was a part of the Cheetah chain, but it was a tiny little downtown operation, okay. And I think that's what I liked about it is the intimacy of it. And I did try to go to the big Cheetah Club, and I was not.
You wanted to transfer
I
over
was
there?
Not, well, I mean, you know, my little other friend who was in art school was making some big bucks over there, but I was totally intimidated, and I, you know.
Okay, but so obviously you felt comfortably.
It worked well with art school, but it got me thinking about burlesque shows.
Okay,
so that was that led to things for me later. I was in a punk band. The same person who dared me to audition for the strip club also dared me to audition for her punk band.
Mm-hmm.
And
you had to audition?
Yeah, had to audition
naked.
Well, I don't know if they even consider themselves a punk band, but maybe when I joined, I like my approach to the microphone was like Johnny Rotten, because I knew that when he was asked to audition for the Sex Pistols, he didn't know how to sing either. So he just out of sheer fear of rejection, he just like kind of screamed into the mic. He was like, I've got to make this work somehow. You know, he was, you know, feeling a little dead end in his life, and he was going to make that work, so he just screamed. And
well, he
so
did carry
kind of,
a tune, though. There are melodies to those.
There are
Sex Pistols.
There are.
He's a good lyricist.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
but I'm just saying that was his approach to the audition. So I kind of followed suit.
Well, it was punk rock, you know.
Right. And okay. There you go.
Now, do you get involved in the movie business there in Atlanta? Are you doing some scene painting? Is that how you start off doing that?
Porn.
Well, I wasn't, certainly not.
Well, you know, actually, I think Manny, this is a good time to get take a little break.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do that.
What are you drinking there?
Do I say it on the mic?
Don't worry about it. Listen, Troubled Nation knows the drill. We'll be right back.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Mm-hmm. I am Renee Coleman, back with our guest, Miss Max Bernardi. Now, Max, I know you've listened to a bunch of these shows. I know you understand the current model we're working under. It's a listener-supported operation we've got going here. And, you know, we do have a PayPal link and a Venmo link in the show notes of every show, as well as the Facebook posts that we do for the show. But sometimes people will send an envelope and with a letter to Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge, and it will be, you know, addressed to the bar, care of Manny and Renee, or care of Troubled Men Podcast. But then sometimes people will approach me in real life, IRL as the kids like to call it, and they'll come up and they'll compliment me on the podcast. And just when I got to the Pat Cronin memorial party on Saturday night, I was talking to a guy. He's complimenting us on the podcast, how much he likes it. He reaches in his wallet and he pulls out some money. He says, "Here, I wanted to give this to you." So that was Paul Grass. So shout out to Paul Grass for buying a couple of rounds of drinks that we're enjoying tonight.
Thank you,
Manny's
Paul.
He's eyeing you, looking for his cut.
Support the podcast either in person or through those links. Also, we have follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram. Also, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Helps us a lot. Costs you nothing. We do still have the Trouble Men podcast t-shirts. It's not something we give out to the guests. We do give them Trouble Men podcast stickers, and there's okay. a couple of stickers for you.
Fantastic.
The Trouble Men podcast shirts are there. The link to purchase those in the show notes as well. Yeah, keep your eye out for the Iguanas coming up with through the Midwest with Sonny Landreth on our co-build tour starting there the end of March. You can see all those dates at iguanas.com. Back to our guest, Ms. Max Bernardi. Okay, Max. Well, when we left you, you were
hanging upside down on a pole.
Yeah, no, you've moved beyond that. You're getting involved in the movie biz.
Well, I was in a punk rock band.
Oh, that's
and,
right.
And there was
yeah.
a guy who suddenly wanted to join the band. I'm like, who is this guy? Why do we need him? We've already
Michael
got
Stipe.
A guitarist. No. But he worked on the TV show In the Heat of the Night.
Oh, yeah.
And it opened my eyes that there was this whole film industry thing, you
right.
know, and I could possibly work in it. So
was that with Carol O'Connor?
Yes, it was.
Oh,
it was.
Okay.
He would
Another
have to
racist,
drive that
yeah.
man back and forth.
Carol O'Connor,
the
yeah, huge racist.
I don't think so.
I think so.
Carol O'Connor?
No,
yeah.
not at all. Not
huh.
in real life.
Yeah, he was Archie Bunker, man.
Not in real
and he's
life.
The guy. He's the guy. His own son. ODs on cocaine.
Oh yeah,
wow,
yeah, yeah.
And then
yeah,
he's
that was
like,
terrible.
Yeah,
he was mad at the guy that sold it to him.
Yeah,
now,
so
well,
yeah,
yeah,
it's just like, well, that
be.
Was bullshit. Your son did the coke. Your son went and bought the coke.
Right.
It's not the dealer's
right.
fault that your son
yes,
died.
Yes. yes
and he
true.
Tried to bring that against this guy, and he won. He won some kind of thing.
Yeah, that was
dealer.
You know, I chalked that up to a terribly hurt parent. I agree.
It's
it
so
was
true.
it was misplaced.
So true.
Anyway, moving on. So
by the way, on the TV show.
Oh,
on
yeah.
the TV show,
right.
he had a black girlfriend on the TV show. I don't know if you ever saw it. I think
Can't
she was somehow on the police. She was on the police force.
Was it
but
Mrs.
there were
Tibbs?
Romantic scenes. Oh my God! You know, I'll admit I never watched the show either. But I knew enough about what was getting shot. I like occasionally worked support for the wardrobe department.
So Carol Connell's character had
yes
a
because
black. Girlfriend
on the TV show.
Oh,
right.
Really?
They were writing all
the
injustices.
All the,
right.
Archie
of,
Bunker stuff.
Of,
yeah.
Yes,
and
all
it was
the
Mrs. Jefferson.
No, but I believe, well,
Roxy
you know.
Roker.
I want to say,
Roker,
I think she worked
yeah.
on the police force. Now, you know, like maybe you shouldn't have been dating someone else on the police force. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
anyway.
Did they have rats on this
fly
police force?
In, HR nowadays.
Right. Exactly.
Less rats. They had less rats than nowadays, too.
Right.
So anyway, moving ahead, so you get involved in
crazy
in television
jobs
production
here and there,
okay.
right? But ultimately, it led to me doing some scenic painting.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on Consenting Adults, that movie, for example. I worked a little on RoboCop 3.
Consenting Adults, who was in that?
Paul Reiser.
Wow.
And Angela Bassett.
What? No,
wow.
no.
Yeah,
wait,
I think they were
think
there,
so.
Yeah. Consenting Adults.
Kevin Kline was
Kevin
in that
Kline.
Movie. And, oh gosh.
And the girl from Flashdance.
Rebecca De Mornay, right?
Oh, okay.
Or am I wrong about that? No, that's know. Hands at Rock.
You could say
cradle.
Anything.
Sorry,
it's
sorry,
not
sorry.
Important. This is not how
okay,
I
no, I can't remember.
Nobody saw that movie.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you get in, so you start doing some scene painting.
I didn't
and,
see it either.
And,
yeah, exactly.
So you do that for a while. Does that lead you to coming to New Orleans? How does that, we're trying to move the
a
narrative
little bit.
Along
yes,
here.
Yes. I worked a little bit in the film industry. Unfortunately, the film industry kind of dried up. Some guy on the Atlanta, the Georgia Film Commission goes and makes a bad deal in North Carolina. He tries to bargain for too much money while looking totally disheveled and hungover. And he wasn't taken seriously. And all the business went to Wilmington.
North Carolina
instead for a while. And so then it left me scrambling. And I started to paint booths, like scenic trade show booths, like for LA Gear, for Reebok, but that slowly led to mural work. I ended up working for a company for a while that's now defunct, but they had a project doing murals in the Waterworks Museum in Clanton, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And so slowly my career started to roll more and more towards doing commercial painting, towards mm-hmm. being a scenic artist. Yeah. And then at some point, well, I guess at some point in the midst of all this, I was still playing some music, you know, with the band. Maybe now with a different lineup, you know how these things happen. Mm-hmm. And at some point, a friend convinced me to do the Betty Pages contest.
Right, which I saw that in your bio, yeah. And I was thinking, but you don't look anything like Betty Page.
Well, you know, you just buy a black wig.
Okay, all right. I see.
And all you have to do is do a cool number.
Okay.
Were
you a Betty Page fan, an Irving Claw fan?
I was.
Okay.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
But not all the rope stuff, though. Just the pin-up stuff, right?
I guess so. Yeah, I know. She did appeal to the fetishists out there.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of bondage photos of
definitely.
Betty Page.
She was one of the first ones to ever do that stuff. Yeah, but of course I found all that fascinating, but I never really necessarily personally got into all that. But
sure,
I digress.
Yeah.
So I did this contest and I met someone named Eve Wynn. Who was also had done a fair amount of stripping and had also had an interest in burlesque. We both won mm-hmm. somehow.
Okay.
And we started plotting and scheming about doing a burlesque show. And it ended up being a fantastic thing. It was a wonderful.
Now, was this kind of like at the tail end of the lounge movement, which kind of
right?
morphs into the burlesque scene? You know, it's
I
all
would
these
say
retro
so.
Kind of
exactly.
fads. These trends are getting regurgitated, and suddenly
you're doing this in this small little club in Atlanta.
Not at the same club.
Oh. Yeah, you've moved on by then.
This is happening in all sorts of different clubs all over the place. But Mike Geyer
you're still taking
happened
your
to
clothes
be in
off,
town.
Right?
With no, the, no,
oh, okay,
I quit
right.
that. I,
no, I mean with the burlesque.
That
isn't that
oh.
involved. It's
well, you're wearing pasties and stuff.
Kind
like
of.
That.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I think I was wearing pasties.
Yeah.
So classing it up.
Classing
well,
it up.
Like okay. Burlesque was very classy. It only
well,
show. They would tease.
Exactly.
Right.
It was and that's
tease.
What fascinated
yeah, yeah, yeah.
me. The performance aspect mm-hmm. is what really appealed to me. So we produced a show that we called Go Go and Torchy's Taboo Review.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Geyer happened to be in town. You know, he was taking a hiatus from touring with the Useless Playboys, and he was smitten with Kelly Hogan, who was in a band called the Jody Grind for a while, and many other bands.
Now,
you know,
Mike, is Mike now Puddles the Clown?
Puddles the Clown, yes.
That's
he
Big
is
Mike,
a Puddles
right?
the
yeah,
Clown
yeah.
fame
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I know Mike from the Useless Playboys. Those guys,
sure.
we played shows with the Iguanas and the Useless
right.
Playboys. I mean, those guys were
And slowly he started to evolve this clown persona,
right,
which
right,
I don't
right.
know what to say about
he
this.
He covers Glenn Styler. He's been
yes,
hugely successful with Puddles the Clown. Anyway,
sure.
it's funny how these people keep coming. So you're involved with a burlesque show with Big Mike, right?
And yes, okay. and we put together a band, so we had acts with live music. We were the first show like this that I had ever heard of.
Okay.
And we opened the show with me doing a number where there was a guy who came on stage with a pith helmet and a headlamp, and he was entering a tomb. And of course, I painted an amazing backdrop. It looked Egyptian. And I was in mummy wrappings with this gigantic headdress that made me look like I could be the tomb of Cleopatra.
Okay.
I mean the what am I trying to say? And the sarcophagus of Cleopatra.
Right, 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 right.
And he removes my gigantic sarcophagus head, and I come to life. And I start to slowly unravel for him. So that's how the show opened. But we tried to really come up with imaginative numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a cross-dresser who had gigantic puppets next to him. Like he did an Andrew Sister number, like dancing.
Like, I like it.
Where all three of them were doing the exact same thing. Just very, very clever
routines.
So
were you guys getting written up a lot since
totally.
This was kind of a new thing?
Totally.
You know, it's like getting a lot of coverage in the Atlanta press?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
And it's really a shame because I really didn't continue on with it, but I mean, we got an incredible response. And unfortunately, I didn't really know how to seek funding to keep it going myself. But anyway, I...
If you can't sell tickets, that's the only.
Kind of,
it's not going to be any public funding.
I told you about something sort of gossipy about it. I think, but
yeah, we don't need to go into any of that.
That's okay.
So
why bring it up then?
Oh, sorry.
Tell us how you get from
but
Atlanta to New Orleans.
I decided at some point.
Let's cross
I don't
the Rubicon
know,
here.
I like the Olympics were happening. I didn't think that I wanted to stay in Atlanta anymore, and I thought that
the 94 there was more Olympics. Soul.
1996 Olympics. Oh,
96 Olympics.
And I felt like New Orleans had more soul, and it was somehow beckoning to me, and that somehow I was going to be able to do more mural work here. And as a matter of fact, I have. But
now, had you ever been here before?
I had. You know, growing up in Mobile, Alabama, it's like practically in our back door.
Right, right, right.
So I always came here as a kid and felt drawn to it.
Well, Mobile always likes to say, like, compete with us on the Mardi Gras thing. Like to say, well, we were the first Mardi Gras.
We were where the French landed first, too. I mean, we were established anyway, in 1718.
We won't relitigate that tonight. So again,
now, did you know Richard Jewell?
No, I have no idea you're talking about.
He was from Atlanta.
Who exploded the bomb at the Olympics.
I was there at that time, that very night.
I was there, too.
I was really?
Yeah, well, I was supposed to play the next day. The Iguanas were supposed to play at what was that?
The Olympic Village.
Yeah, yeah.
I was there performing with the Marching Abominables that night.
Oh, okay.
That's an aspect I didn't mention. But yeah, I joined the Marching Abominables kind of as a reveler. And we had just come back from down there on MARTA and found out that a bombing had taken place somehow between when we had left there and when we got off at Inman Park Station.
Crazy. Yeah, I was already in Atlanta.
You didn't answer my question.
What was that?
Did you know him personally? Hell no.
Okay.
It's a big city.
Let's answer the question. We'll move on.
Poor guy was unfairly targeted. He was the guy that discovered it, but they wound up targeting him as the guy
planting it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they actually discovered that guy who was an abortion clinic bomber who they found he was like out in the woods. They wound up tying that bombing back to him.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds more plausible.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. So New Orleans is beckoning to you. So you get totally here. Now, I know you wound up doing like float painting for the Jerome Kern organization, or no, not Jerome Kern, Blaine Kern organization, excuse me.
Well, the truth is I was kind of reticent, but I did go and I met Barry Kern, and he was looking to hire people to paint sculptures. He was starting to get more commercial contracts to paint, say, sculptures for the Orleans Casino in Las Vegas, and things for the Riverwalk. It was starting to turn into its own enterprise. So I was one of his first employees for Kern Sculpture.
Oh, okay.
As a painter. But pretty soon politics just got weird there. Like I didn't even last, I think, a full 6 months, maybe. But things
internal
so,
politics was yeah. Was it already between him and the dad? Was it already getting weird? I know they ultimately had some lawsuits filed between them at some point.
No, things were very smooth and running. It was a well-oiled machine between them, more or less. Mm. It was just with the other employees, just the whole organization was just kind of
your
backwards
job
the
mates,
way it worked.
Your mates that you
I didn't like the atmosphere of the place. It was just too backbiting and weird, and I ended up taking
now
a job for a while.
You couldn't complain to HR about this?
No.
Because they knew about your background?
I don't know about that.
Okay. But, probably didn't have a big HR department.
Because you didn't
there,
put that so. On your resume when you applied, did you?
Not exactly. No, okay, I did good. Not. Yeah, no.
But why would you? Yeah, yeah.
I was drawn to the French Quarter, and I met someone who was looking to hire a saleswoman. Well, I actually kind of thought it was a gallery, honestly. Uh-huh. And when I
yes, you hook up with Stacy Hoover.
Stacy Hoover. Well, I knew. She told me she kind of presented it as if she had a gallery in the French Quarter. And when I came, it was really a jewelry shop. But I went and sold watches and jewelry for a while with Stacy, and it was a nice reprieve from the art business.
You know, I spent a weekend at Stacy Hoover's parents' house in the country in Ohio with the Iguanas and Stacy Hoover and her sister and the sister's husband. And it's one of those things that it's happened a few times to me in my career where you have a few days off, you're on the road, and they talk you into going to some remote wilderness location, and they always say, oh, it's going to be so nice. It's out there in the woods, and it's quiet, and there's no people around, and I always say, what's the good part of
death.
This? What
yeah.
is the, there's all of that sounds terrible to me.
Right.
But so I know Stacey Hoover. Yeah. Yeah. So and go on.
Well, anyway, it was interesting for me because I learned that if I ever needed to be a salesperson, actually it gave me some salesman skills
okay.
for when I started to do murals. It actually gave me a skill set for how to talk to customers on my own. So that really helped me a lot with my art career, I would say.
Nice.
So yeah, it made me a little less fearful, a little less timid. You'd think that I wouldn't be timid anymore after, you know, past occupations. But anyway.
Right. You're building all these different aspects
exactly.
of these levels of armor.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I, okay. I was living in the French Quarter. I had a chance. I was inspired. I was coming home and doing my own paintings at night.
Nice.
So that was very different because I had energy to create my own work. James Michalopoulos lived close by. A friend said, "What you know? He loves to just simply take photos of people and do paintings. Why don't you model for him?" And so he ended up coming to my apartment, and he observed my work and was really complimentary. And what this painting I was working on, he was like, "Oh my God, this is going to be the anchor for your first solo show." I mean, anyway, it was very positive, really encouraging. And I met Tony Green, and it was just...
And Michael Dees, you said.
And Michael Dees, yes, yeah.
The great Michael Dees.
Exactly, who I know was recently on your podcast.
Well, he was on long ago, but he comes up all the time.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah, he's a close associate.
I did hear that you observed him on Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, Michael was recently on the CBS Morning News.
Exactly. That's Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So you get involved in the local art scene through Michalopoulos, and
exactly.
you make some contacts. And
exactly. And then I ended up at some point, like Chef Paul Prudhomme had a mural in his backyard that he needed to have restored. And I ended up getting that gig.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun and fascinating. And do you remember Sean O'Malley?
That name is familiar, but...
He used to do the Irish show on WWOZ.
Okay.
It turned out that he was kind of his chef, I would almost say his head chef, but his chef in his own personal kitchen that helped him develop recipes for restaurants and for even like Sara Lee. And
Paul Prudhomme
I'm probably
had
going
his own
a little
personal
off.
Chef?
He had a chef that worked with him to help come up with commercial recipes.
Now he's the guy who couldn't stand up, right? Paul.
At the end, yeah. he had the
every
one
time
of those
I've seen
riding around on a
thing
scooter.
On TV, he was always in a chair.
He was bow-legged.
Okay.
And he had gained so much weight when he was a chef that it put too much strain on his legs.
Yeah.
And so he had to ride around on a scooter.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he had workout equipment on site and a personal trainer that would come. And he got back into good physical
condition.
And that
person was Richard Simmons?
Yes, it was.
Hell no. But anyway, it was someone who was more into strength training. But anyway, but he still could never regain, he just bowed his legs too much.
Yeah.
Now,
so you
start doing murals for
exactly.
him. You start getting hired to do murals for the Audubon Institute and some of that stuff.
I got hired to do be in charge of the art department at Maloney Productions for a little while, doing scenery for Mardi Gras balls, which was fascinating. So, but I was in charge of the art department, and simultaneously I was working at night doing scenery for Southern Rep Theater.
Oh, cool.
So I was definitely burning the candle at both ends.
But that's great to most artists are like, well, I paint and I hope I have a show but you're there doing the work. You got more work than you can
right.
Keep up with. That's fantastic.
But, you know, I careened from, like, working a job where I was not having to make a living doing art, and then I was starting to develop my own personal work, and then I started getting back into doing commercial work, and so it took away from the energy of creating personal work.
Well,
so
it's a trade-off. Yeah,
is such a trade-off.
Now, at some point, you start doing. Maybe I'm jumping ahead too far, and we can go back if I am.
That's okay.
But you start the series of paintings of musicians. And one of them, you wind up doing a painting of Ernie Cato, which I think was actually in the mother-in-law lounge. And I know for a fact that painting was later acquired by the Historic New Orleans Collection.
So true.
Who it's funny how things, subjects that come up, like just a couple of weeks ago, we had Allison Fensterstock, who's now working on a book.
That's right.
On Bunny Matthews for the Historic New Orleans Collection. HNOC comes back. Comes
off
up again.
And off, over and over again. Well, okay, so of course, at that time, I also ended up hanging out at the mother-in-law lounge and ended up meeting Ernie and Antoinette. And you know how charming Antoinette was.
Sure.
So warm and welcoming. Yeah. And she found out I was an artist and she said, "Oh my God, you should do a portrait of Ernie. We've been wanting to do a portrait of him. Can we hire you as a painter to do a portrait of him?"
And that was supposed to hang in the mother-in-law lounge?
Right. Uh-huh.
And it did,
so
right?
Yeah. It sure did. Yeah. So originally, I agreed to do a portrait, and I think we were thinking of a normal portrait size, and I think I only agreed to do it for $300. Mm-hmm. But I what I did is I came over, I said, let's go to Louis Armstrong Park. And let's take some pictures. You know, I want to get him up on that hill. And they put him in the red suit with the gold cape. And I was taking pictures of him on this
hill. Emperor of the world.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, he looks so amazing. How can I not do a full-length portrait of this man? I mean, he just looks phenomenal.
Right.
And of course, then naturally, rather than on a hill, I had to put him in the clouds because he was the emperor of the universe, right?
Yeah. Emperor of the universe, yes. I stand corrected.
And, right. And then I got this idea at some point. They didn't even know I was doing a full-length portrait. They had no idea that it was a life-size image at this point. But I convinced them to loan me some records so I could have them floating around them. I was like, I just want to incorporate one or two into the painting. They had no idea. But, of course, I incorporated...
all of his hits.
Five records floating around him. So much
Here
fun.
Come the Girls, Mother-in-Law. Yeah, he had some greats.
Exactly, exactly. So
White
that
Boy.
Was my very first musician painting. What?
White Boy was a great song.
Yeah, it was.
Why You Steal the Black Man's Music. Ever hear that song?
I have, actually.
Yeah.
It's not the one that comes to mind, first thing, but
it
can't be forgotten.
Here Come the Girls. Well, there was a classic, posthumous classic.
That's a great one that will never die.
Right, exactly.
So, that's terrific. That's quite an honor to be included in the HNOC's permanent collection.
Amazing, yeah. Yes, and I owe it to Antoinette. But anyway, at that point, I was actually pregnant. They came over to my house, and I,
You think that's funny?
Only because I'm recalling the photographs of me where I've got this gigantic basketball, you know, sticking out of the front of me in front of pictures of with Ernie in front of the painting. So, yes, it was funny at the time.
Yeah.
If you could see the pictures, you'd be laughing too.
Cool.
So, but anyway, and they came over in the van, the mother-in-law van, to pick this thing up because I couldn't deliver it, and they were astounded with it.
Right.
And they signed. I tried to hand them the singles back, and they were like, "Oh no, these are for you." And they signed them and gave them to me.
Nice.
Yeah, isn't that sweet? Or I should say, he did.
Yeah, no, that's terrific.
Antoinette's idea always on top of everything.
Right. Know? Right. Now. Is this at some point you get involved with burlesque in New Orleans, right?
I do, yeah.
So and that's the Shim Shamettes again. It's
right.
That's kind of right at the height of the lounge slipping into burlesque movement. So
I was totally prego. I said, had this gigantic basketball sticking out in front of me. And I find out that there's this burlesque show in town, and it sounds just like what we produced. And I'm like, oh, my my God, I want to be a part of this. But I mean, I was just like in no physical condition.
I was going to say that would be like a specialty act, you know.
So anyway, I had my daughter in October. It took me all the way until May till I was anywhere near in the right shape to audition for Lorelei Fuller. Maybe it was April. But anyway, she loved what I did for her so much. It was based on a number I had done in Go-Go and Torchy's Taboo Review. And I recreated the number, and she loved it and put me in the very last show of, I believe, 2000. Yeah, the year 2000. So I got to be a part of them then. And then the very next year, I got to participate in every single show that they produced. And that was a wonderful experience. I got to be a part of like group dance numbers where, you know, we were the pirates and Joanne was the treasurer and popped out of the treasure chest and did her tassel twirling number. And it was great. It was great. I was singing with Vanessa Neiman.
Okay.
Yeah, and Marcy Hessling, who owns Fifi Mahoney's. Anyway, we were all singing harmony together and rum and Coca-Cola.
Vanessa Neiman, Gal Holiday.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes.
It's a variety entertainment sort
of
thing.
Right. Yeah, I did a Mae West number, you know.
Now, did a lot of... I never went to any of those things, but I was aware of them.
Wow.
You know, did you have a lot of subscription? I mean, people really turned out to see that. I remember it was very popular at the
time.
They
were standing room only shows. Nice. And we would do a 9 o'clock and an 11 o'clock show.
Nothing against you. I had young kids at the time.
I did too.
Did a lot of businessmen go to these shows? Did a lot of businessmen go to these shows?
No, these were hipster shows. Yeah. I hate to tell you, they were hipster shows.
Hipster doofuses.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. They weren't all doofuses.
A lot more. And the thing is, so I remember the lounge movement, and like, I really love a lot of that music, you know, for real.
Yeah, me too.
And when that came out, and it's like all these rock guys are doing it, and then they, you know, they put on the fake suit, you know, the shark skin suits, and they're doing it, but it's all like, oh, isn't this ironic how shitty this music is? But we think it's cool. I mean, we're pretending that it's cool, and I just thought that's gross. Fuck you guys, man.
I don't know. There were some genuine personalities in it, but
yeah, there was a lot of guys who three years later were you know, putting on glam outfits. You know, it's like, okay, well, that passed, so now it's time to
like
jump
who?
On this next
Give
trend.
Give us an example.
Well, what's that that band that actually John Fohl played in that band, Big Voodoo Daddy, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. Those guys, like, you know, they were
fun to see. I saw them live a few times.
Yeah, I'm just saying
that. If you know how to dance to that music, it's a lot of fun.
Well, no, I dig the music. That's what I'm saying. The bandwagon-esque way that a lot of people, rock guys, jumped onto it and almost had like this irony of like, yeah, this is kind of corny, but we're just doing it because it's something different.
Like Harry Connick Jr.?
Combustible Edison. Well, did you like Combustible Edison?
Well, like bands like that. I'm not even going to talk about it. I mean, they did some cool stuff, yeah. And there were some bands.
Well, my band was like a mix of punk rock and that too.
Right. Well, your band was kind
of
way before that. Yeah.
Can I raise my hand and say you had Alison Fensterstock on the show, and you never mentioned that she was in the a sophisticate.
You know, with someone like Alison Fensterstock, there's so much to talk about.
It's
impossible to get to all
that
of it.
True.
So I apologize. I missed out on something that you wanted to hear about. But I hit on as much as I could.
I'm proud of that girl.
I'm dancing as fast as I can right here. Okay, Gelsey Kirkland.
But no, that is that's true. That would be a total like kind of non sequitur, I guess. But, you know...
Anyway, back to you.
Yeah.
So you get involved, but it's kind of near the end of that, right? So you get another charge, another bite out of the apple of the burlesque experience.
True. And then you start raising your bite. My last bite. Frankly,
that was probably enough, right?
Because the Shim Shimettes kind of disbanded after that, really.
And we're all getting older, you know. It's like there's a shelf life to all this stuff, right?
maybe. But what was really happening is my husband at the time, Annabella's father, my daughter's father, was all of a sudden he wrote a play, and this play got produced by Mico Maccione at Le Chat Noir, and then suddenly he wrote another play, and he's like, well, who's going to produce it? And it just happened to line up with the Shim Shamet's ending. And we managed to book his play into Shim Shim, the Shim Shim Club. And I designed the sets for it and did the promotional mm-hmm. art. And so it kind of segued nicely into a whole other aspect of my career, I guess, where I was creating theater. I was involved in the production end
of a show. Now,
designing and painting the sets this time. Yeah.
Nice. So, we're kind of getting towards the downslope of the podcast here, but talk about public art. So now you're involved in, you've done a lot of public murals. There is a lot of public art that people do, different people do for
that
different reasons here in New Orleans. Now, this was just in the newspaper last week where talking about some of these murals where the city will say, even though it's something that was paid for by the building owner and intentional, an intentional mural, the city will say, well, no, that's an eyesore. We want you to either paint it over, or we're going to come paint it over, or there's that guy, the Gray Ghost, who will come.
No. I thought the Gray Ghost was disbanded. Like, he was no longer...
He was ordered to stop years ago.
Well,
yeah, but I think he's dead now.
Okay, well, good riddance.
But I haven't heard this. So they're complaining about some of the murals in town.
So what has happened is the city has ordered people to paint over their own murals.
Wow.
As soon as they paint them over, graffiti people come
exactly.
and tag them
that's
all.
That's terrible.
Yeah. It looks like garbage.
That's the point.
Well, I like some graffiti. So
some of it's good. Yeah. But, if you have like a well-thought-out mural like our guest would paint, and then you have to paint that over and just make it a blank page
Because
the city wants their cut, man.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The city wants their cut.
Bromart was on Magazine Street, was getting tagged by graffiti artists every week, and they were trying to paint over it and maintain it, and it was getting ridiculous. So he was like, well, let's paint a mural, because once a mural goes up, usually graffiti artists respect murals,
right,
and they won't
leave
tag
it alone.
It anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they ended up hiring me. Actually, it's kind of a strange thing. They approached the Audubon Institute, don't ask me, to design a mural, and it involved the 45-foot-long alligator and a nutria. It was a swamp scene,
mm-hmm.
kind of tied in with the fact that Bromart helped fund part of the swamp exhibit there at the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had done a lot of exhibitory work for the zoo, the aquarium, like as you were mentioning earlier. And so they approached me about doing this mural. So I've developed a relationship with Jay Bro and Bromart now.
Nice.
And I ended up doing another mural on the other side of the building. But the point is that all tagging stopped the minute I put that mural up. So it doesn't make sense to paint over any mural, honestly, whether you like it or not. It's probably better than the alternative.
In Los Angeles, it became a huge problem for business owners in the 90s. They would
graffiti
put,
or
well, the
murals.
Graffiti. Well, the graffiti, they'd paint their shops and stuff. And you know what they did to stop the gangbangers from graffitiing? They would paint religious stuff.
Interesting.
Like the Madonna or something?
Yeah, that stuff.
Yeah.
Jesus and the Madonna and all. And it all stopped.
Great idea.
Okay.
It all stopped.
I like
it. So there's one good thing, I guess, about religion.
Yeah.
But it
scares people.
Yeah, it scares the hell out of people.
I ain't touching that, baby.
Even the gangbangers, it scares.
Well,
good.
They should be scared.
Maybe we need a few Madonna murals around town.
I'm into it, man. It's a very Catholic city.
It is.
She hasn't had a good record, though, in a while.
She's really gone to seed.
She's gone to plastic surgery.
This Botox.
Have you seen her lately?
It's Botox.
It's very sad.
It's sad. I don't like it.
I met her, and she was very sweet girl.
Yeah. I really liked her a lot. I was a big fan. But now she's gone to wearing the grills in her mouth, you know. Oh, my God.
You can't hang on forever. You just, it's really not a,
yeah,
not
she's
a good,
trying. I'm disappointed. Yeah, she's not aged well.
It's tough. Yeah, you know, we all
like Trump was a disappointment for me.
Big disappointment for Manny. He expected more. He was hoping for more.
After The Apprentice?
Yeah. Just after we got elected, I thought, well, let's give him a shot. And he was a disappointment.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a big letdown for me.
Yeah, big letdown. But I didn't vote for him.
Right.
I didn't vote.
You just had high hopes once he was.
I just had, once he's there, I was like, well, I'll give this
guy a shot. We all hope for the best, as always.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, hope springs eternal, as they say.
Let me ask you a question. Do you go fishing?
No, I don't.
You don't?
No,
okay.
But I buy fish often.
Yeah, I love fish. Yeah, who doesn't love fish? I just thought I'd ask you that
question. But I do like to go on boats past fishing camps, Cajun fishing camps. I really
like
that.
I don't like that at all.
Oh, I love that.
Really?
Yeah.
So what do you like about it?
Yeah.
You get on a boat and go by a fishing camp?
Yeah, well,
is that like for a summer camp for kids?
No. Like where the adults like go on the weekend with their boats and they go fish.
Right. People have the camps.
Or
they're up on piers. Yeah.
I volunteered with Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana, and I got to like ride out on a ship on a boat, a small boat, and like they had dolphins swimming alongside of us, and we got to see horses
it's amazing, we're really going off cultural. Yeah, well, we are kind of wrapping up here, so any final words for the Troubled Nation, Max?
I'm honored to finally be a troubled woman.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm not sure. Well, I
finally.
Welcome.
Finally.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's been going on for a while, kid. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah. But I feel like kind of inducted.
Oh well.
Into something.
Yeah. Well, everyone.
Now.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
So,
yeah. It's
an official title now.
Welcome.
You can say you've been on the show and you survived.
Yes.
Basically. There you go.
And you got the sticker.
And you got a sticker.
And you got the cocktails.
And I didn't even get to touch on the possible work that I may be doing at the
prison?
OJC. Yeah, I didn't even get to talk about that.
So quickly, OPP. Now this is great. You're leading a mural project with prisoners.
It's true, but I really don't have all the details yet. So we officially meet tomorrow. So I can tell you more then.
Something
next
on the
time.
Horizon, something to look forward to.
My advice to you is don't wear this outfit. Okay. If you're going
to
work with prisoners,
I'll make sure
all right? It'll be like the scene from Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah, don't tell them you're an exotic dancer or a stripper. Not on the first time, anyway. Well, thank you so much, Max. This has been Kicks. Really fun episode. And thank you, Manny. And as always, in the Troubled Men podcast, we'd like to say trouble never ends.
But the struggle continues. Good night.
Good night.
There you're sitting on another pine to take action. You're never so inclined. You say be patient, all in good time. But the fruit is slowly rotting on the vine. Sinking. talking, it's slowly running down, your tail is spinning.